like to extend a warm welcome to you all this morning as we continue with our look at Mark's Gospel. And today we are going to be looking at a number of stories in the Lord's life connected with the Lord. And we're going to see how those seemingly discrete events are actually all connected together and how they fit in with what we have been talking about over the last few weeks in relation to the disciples' change of attitude as reflected in how they were when the need presented them in the feeding of the 5,000, that shift that occurred when Jesus came and involved his disciples in the feeding of the 4,000. There was a shift there, and we continue looking at this shift in attitude where the disciples are moving from, well, in the case of the 5,000, send them away, Lord, let them fill their own need, to the case of the 4,000, where they actually ask the question, well, how can such a need be met? And so we see there a major shift in their outlook in regard to the need presenting itself and their ability to see that it is the Lord who is the source of sustenance for people in need, that they in themselves have nothing that they can bring, that it is the Lord Himself that is able to operate through them and us as we look to Him. Let us pray. The first reading from the Word this morning is from the book of Leviticus, reading chapter 2, verses 7 to 11. If your offering is a grain offering baked in a covered pan, it shall be made of fine flour with oil. You shall bring the grain offering that is made of these things to the Lord, and when it is presented to the priest, he shall bring it to the altar. Then the priest shall take from the grain offering a memorial portion and burn it on the altar. It is an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord. And what is left of the grain offering shall be Aaron's and his sons. It is most holy of the offerings to the Lord made by fire. No grain offering which you bring to the Lord shall be made with leaven, for you shall burn no leaven nor any honey in any offering to the Lord made by fire. Now from the Gospel of Mark, chapter 8, verses 11 through 30. And we remember that the Lord has got into a boat last week and he has come to the region of Dalmanutha. Then the Pharisees came out and began to dispute with him, seeking from him a sign from heaven, testing him. But he sighed deeply in his spirit and said, "Why does this generation seek a sign? Assuredly, I say to you, no sign shall be given to this generation." And he left them, and getting into the boat again, departed to the other side. Now the disciples had forgotten to take bread, and they did not have more than one loaf with them in the boat. Then he charged them, saying, "Take heed, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod." And they reasoned among themselves, saying, "Is it because we have no bread?" But Jesus, being aware of it, said to them, "Why do you reason because you have no bread? Do you not yet perceive nor understand? Is your heart still hardened? Having eyes, do you not see? And having ears, do you not hear? And do you not remember? When I broke the 5 loaves for the 5,000, how many basketfuls of fragments did you take up?" They said to him, 12. "Also, when I broke the 7 for the 4,000, how many large baskets full of fragments did you take up?" And they said, 7. So he said to them, "How is it you do not understand?" Then he came to Bethsaida, and they brought a blind man to him and begged him to touch him. So he took the blind man by the hand and led him out of the town. And when he had spit on his eyes and put his hands on him, he asked him if he saw anything. And he looked up and said, "I see men like trees walking." Then he put his hands on his eyes again and made him look up. And he was restored and saw everyone clearly. Then he sent him away to his house, saying, "Neither go into the town, nor tell anyone in the town." Now Jesus and his disciples went out to the towns of Caesarea and to Philippi. And on the road he asked his disciples, saying to them, "Who do men say that I am?" So they answered, "John the Baptist, but some say Elijah, and others one of the prophets." And he said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Peter answered and said to him, "You are the Christ." Then he strictly warned them that they should tell no one about him. And the reading from the Heavenly Doctrines this morning from the work Arcana Celestia, paragraph 7906. To go further with what made with yeast and not made with yeast referred to, it should be recognized that the purification of truth from falsity cannot ever come about in a person without so-called fermentation. That is, without the conflict of falsity with truth and of truth with falsity. But after the conflict has taken place and truth has triumphed, the falsity falls away like dregs, and the truth emerges purified. It is like wine that becomes clear after fermentation as the dregs sink to the bottom. That fermentation or conflict takes place especially when a person's state undergoes a change, that is to say, when his actions begin to spring from the good of charity and not as previously from the truth of faith. For a person's state is not yet made pure while his actions spring from the truth of faith, but they have been made pure when they spring from the good of charity, since now they spring from his will. Previously, they sprang merely from his understanding. So what we see here as we move on from the feeding of the 4,000, and prior to that, Jesus' healing of the deaf mute, them leaving that scene, they come into this place called Dalmanutha. And it is here that the Pharisees once again gather together to confront the Lord and to test him, to contend with the Lord. Now, the interesting thing about this story and about the stories we've been looking at over this month is that they fall towards the center of Mark's gospel. And if you haven't realized by now, the theme running through this is the disciples' difficulty to grasp this idea that the Lord is the source of all that they are and can be. And we see this illustrated in stories around bread or goodness. And the key idea that is through all this is the question of how do we make truth something good? How do we take what we are learning? How do we take the principles that we're wanting established in our lives, from which we want to live from? How do we make them a reality in our life? How is this goodness integrated into our being so that others that we come into contact with can partake of it. This is the central question in the center of Mark's gospel. It is a gospel that has been divided into 16 chapters. We are now in the 8th chapter. So we are here at a point of turning, a fulcrum, if you will, a fulcrum around which this question of making truth become goodness is centered. And that's what the story is about today. These series of stories involving the Lord is this transition. Because in the end, the last story we spoke about is this revelation that Jesus, the man these disciples had been with for who knows how long up to this point, but for some time, they'd heard his teaching, they'd seen his miracles, and now comes that great confession of Peter. Thou art the Christ. Thou art the Messiah. You are the living God. This was the acknowledgement. And from this point in the gospel, the focus now turns to the Lord fulfilling his mission while he was here on earth. So it is a turning point. And it is also a turning point in all those who seek to walk the spiritual path. Because that is the key question. How do I make what I know into something useful? And that question is about a transition, a fundamental transformation in our being, in our outlook, in our perceptions. And it doesn't happen without a fight. We have become used to being in the way we are, in the thinking patterns that we have and hold to, in the affections that periodically come up within us over the course of our day as we go through our habitual routines, replaying things. We've become locked into these. And these things hold us or preserve us. We think they preserve us in our sense of self, in our sense of who we are. But the Lord has much more for us. He seeks to break us out of restricted and limiting patterns of thought, of ways of viewing things, of ways of feeling things. And so it is. He comes to a place of restriction, Dalmanutha. Its name means a cold fountain, something without warmth. And what does he confront here? He confronts, once again, the Pharisees, that hard, unforgiving, judgmental attitude that exists in us all at some level. Because the Pharisees represent a level of thinking that seeks to preserve what is and not to move on. They find their safety and security having taken the things of God and codified them into some rigid structure, which they then try and externally force on everybody else. What they have forgotten is that the things of love come from within. And those external things are the means by which the things of love find its expression. But when those external things become the focus and the sole source of being, when we become attached to them, we shut love out. Shut love out from doing what it needs to do in terms of being able to transform us into more understanding and compassionate people. This is what the Pharisees forgot. And this is what that level of thought in us seeks to maintain. But we also have a higher level of thought. And this is represented by the disciples. Of course, the disciples are developing in their understanding of the things of love, of spiritual things. So there is residue attached to them of these old ways, the influences of their culture, of the Pharisees, of their attitudes, of their understanding of what religion is about. These things hang on and need to be broken. But the principles are there. They're in place for the Lord to use and bring about the transformation. So that is the disciples, this higher level of thinking. Whereas the Pharisees are this lower level of thinking. And what is it that the Lord has to deal with in regard to them? They seek a sign. Prove it. Let's get it all sorted out before we do anything. This is the attitude of the Pharisees. They love to debate about spiritual things. We read of that in the history around the temple. How endless debates continued on about what truth was, what is true. But you see, the Lord is not interested so much in what is true, other than its ability to support us to do that which is good. Truth without good is hard and unforgiving. Good softens truth and makes it something palatable, able to be processed for the good of life. This lower form of thinking that would seek to draw us into rigid structures and ways of doing things is the leaven spoken about by Jesus to his disciples, the leaven of the Pharisees and the leaven of Herod. Of the Pharisees, it speaks of those reasonings which shut love out. Of Herod, it speaks of making things spiritual into something sensual and having it ministered to the lower levels of our life in a way that promotes the loves of self and the world. This is the leaven or the teaching of the Pharisees and of Herod that Jesus is dealing with here. And it's interesting that in terms of leavening or applying yeast in the process of making bread, in this time what used to be done is that old dough was kept aside, a portion of the last baking was kept aside, and that then in turn was mixed with the new. And of course the old transformed the new into an image of itself. And we have spoken about how the traditions of men make the commandments of God void, powerless. And this is what Jesus is referring to here in drawing out this idea of leaven and its impact on that which is good. You see, the Pharisees were interested in preserving their power. And Jesus was a real thorn in their side because of that. And the thing is that when we try and preserve something, our focus is on the thing we're trying to preserve. Our attention is drawn so much into what we have and a fear of losing what we have, that we forget how to live life, how to live the spiritual life. And what that focus does is it shuts others out and it brings a separation between us and others. And we can't connect at an authentic level of life. We prefer just to go through the motions, stay at a superficial level, whereas the Lord is calling us into a relationship with himself so that we can enter into authentic relationships with one another. The term Pharisee means to separate. Hardening oneself, not being able to feel where another person is at. This is the Pharisaical attitude. Well, if everyone just went to church, they would be fine. That is a Pharisaical attitude. It's giving people a form rather than giving them our own hearts. And when we give them a form, we're basically doing what the disciples did at the feeding of the 5,000. Let them go away and find their own stuff to minister to their need. And what did the Lord say? If you recall, He said, "What have you got? What is it you have?" Because the Lord wants us to connect at a heart level. He wants us to go beyond the superficial, the polite sort of stuff, and to work with each other. It's a myth. You cannot regenerate on your own. You need the Lord, and you need others, because the Lord is found in others. That is where we can experience Him and have our own perceptions expanded and opened, so that we can see Him in new ways. The spiritual life is described in the epistles as a new and living way, something dynamic, something happening, something that you're aware of all the time. The Pharisees make it cold, crusty, and hard. Perhaps we can see a clear manifestation of this where the things of life become institutionalized because it just makes things easier. You don't have to deal with it personally. And life then becomes dictated from without. Rules and regulations begin to dictate how we live life, rather than coming from that place within us where the Lord is centered and wanting to break out. Institutional forms of human life, or the institutionalization of human life, can be seen in organizations where bureaucracy has become so heavy that the person or the personal is lost. The bureaucracy has become a substitute for living life, for connecting with one another. And you often hear of people's frustrations when they're having to deal with bureaucracy in terms of them feeling that they're just a number. It's impersonal. May the experience and life of church never become like that. We have to be able to see the person. We have to be able to come and relate out of mercy and compassion. Because it's only as we do that, that trust can be forged. And the relationship becomes something that the world is crying out for. Church should be a reflection of this. It needs to be a reflection of this, because that reflection is a reflection of the living Spirit of God Himself. Bureaucracy is often described as hard and cold. In Dalmanutha, you'll remember, its meaning is cold fountain. It has no warmth. And in terms of our personal lives, we become cold and hard when we're seeking to preserve what we have, when we hold on to it tightly. The imagery here, if you've seen The Lord of the Rings, is that of Gollum, trying to preserve what is his arms wrapped around it, unwilling to let it go, constantly conniving to bring the thing back to himself. And so you have this focus on what little we have. Focus on our limitations. We know that the church should be involved in mission in terms of being able to take what it has and to minister the good things of life to others. Of being able to meet their needs and draw them towards the source of life, which is the Lord Himself. This is what the church is charged with. It's charged with doing this work. But when we look at our limitations, at our inabilities, at our lack of skills or resources, these things, when we are looking that way, we are blinded to possibilities. We are blinded to opportunities. Because it's about us and about us surviving. It's about self-preservation. You know, in the end, trying to preserve what we have, if that is our total focus, will leave us spiritually impoverished. We will decline because there is a lack of insight into how we can be useful as a body of people. In fact, our survival, we're talking about preservation, depends on forgetting about ourselves and beginning to focus on others, that which is outside of ourselves. This is a spiritual principle, and this is the principle that the Lord is trying to drive home with the disciples and with His dealings with the Pharisees. They couldn't see it yet. But you see, if you look at the nature of God, there is nothing about self-preservation in the Lord at all. In fact, the thing that drives the Lord is to give all that He has to the other. To give it all away. Because that is the principle of love. It is taking what little we have, as given in the example of the feeding of the 5,000 and in the example of the feeding of the 4,000. Mightn't be much, but if we apply the principle, that little can be made much. That is the principle there. You remember we talked about the number 5. It's a number that means a little, but that which has great potential. And for that potential to be realized, it takes courage. It takes courage for us to reach out beyond the safety of our own world. And when we are prepared to do that, then the Lord will enter in, not before. And until we do that, we will remain blind as to how we can minister to others, how we can be effective, how we can take our place in the society that we find ourselves in. Obedience comes first. Last week we spoke about the healing of the deaf man. That has to do with obedience. Here we see a man who is blind. So we're moving now. Once we act on the little that we do know, then we can start to deal with our blindness. The Lord can then come in and begin to open up our sight so that we can see how we can be effective. Just prior to coming to this blind man, Jesus said to the disciples, "Do you not yet understand?" Don't you yet understand the principle? The disciples had gone from 5 loaves to 7 loaves, and now they were down to 1, which was a real worry for them. Because if Jesus stopped off somewhere along the way, what were they going to do? Another crowd, and now we've only got 1 loaf. Don't you yet understand? Doesn't matter how small it is. Think of the parable around the talents. It doesn't matter how small it is, it's about how we use it. And that's what the Lord's trying to drive home. So we see the Lord has this blind man brought to him. This represents our understanding, a state of our understanding. And what does the Lord do? Well, the Lord takes the blind man by the hand and leads him out of the town or the city. And we've seen how that a city represents the kind of thinking that we're comfortable living in. So what the Lord says is that, first of all, you have to get out of that sort of thinking. Out of the thinking of self-preservation, because that is the cause of your blindness. Out of thinking that you are the source of what you have, because even the little that you have is from Him. So we have the blind man being led out of that form of thinking. That's what it represents. And then what does Jesus do? Well, Jesus spits on his eyes. Places his hands on his eyes. We remember that he did the same with the deaf man. And because we're dealing with something to do with the understanding, the spit must be something that can be applied to the understanding. It must correspond to something that can be applied to the understanding. Spit's main constituent is water. Water in the Word is a symbol or correspondence of truth. It comes from the Lord's mouth. It's the Lord's Word that comes from His mouth. And His Word is truth itself. And so it's taking these principles, the principles that we are learning, and applying them. And when they are applied, we begin to be able to see. And what is it that this blind man sees first when the Lord asks him? He sees men as trees walking. Doesn't yet see the person, just sees structure. But it's walking. So he sees something of life, movement, progress. All because he's been drawn out of the city that he was in. And there the Lord is able to minister to him. We move out of our own thinking. The Lord can come and He can spit on our eyes. And we will begin to see. The next thing the Lord does is that He places His hands on him again. This is the administration of love. When love begins to press itself upon the understanding, the vision becomes clearer. What does the Lord cause him to do? To look up. To look away from the ground. To look up. To have a vision for possibility, for opportunity. And then he can see clearly. In fact, it says he can see all things. The understanding is opened. And it can now see. And love can be ministered. And perhaps the greatest thing in this series of stories then is this confession of Peter. Some see him merely as a man. Some as John the Baptist. Some as Elijah. But wait, may we see the Lord as the Christ, the one true God of heaven and earth. Amen.